I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lubega, MSNBC, MLB.com, and welcome to what will be an extremely busy Monday edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast, which is obviously the continuation of the show that we did on ESPN on Sunday mornings for nearly three decades. We have much to talk about in pro football. We will eventually get to the big game tonight between Clemson and Alabama, but We start today with the last thing we saw in pro football early last evening, and a field goal. And I've watched a lot of football in my life, guys, that bounced off the upright and then off the crossbar and ended up on, I think the ball ended up sitting on the 3-yard line. And in that moment, while the ball was bouncing around, two seasons were hanging in the balance, waiting to see where that football would end up. And the reason it came down to that is because St. Nick Foles did it again for the Philadelphia Eagles.
He did it again at the end. He wasn't a perfect quarterback by any means, and early on it looked like he lost his mojo. The interceptions early on certainly hurt them, and the 16-15 score that this ended up with it has to be taken in the whole context of, you know, a season where 53-51 was more common, and now the playoffs are all coming down to defense, and the whole weekend was a lot of defensive stops, a lot of punting. I mean, you know, some of these teams in this thing didn't punt during the regular season often in a game, and the kicking games became hugely important. Foles discovered himself in that fourth quarter, the way that he has constantly. Again, we're talking that timeout is so perfect. If they don't call the timeout, You see that he's capable of kicking a ball right through the down the pipe, and then he misses it. It's so hard to really put this in perspective because it so easily could have been the other way around. The Eagles so easily could have lost this game to the Bears, and yet they didn't. They go on. I thought the Bears were the better overall team in terms of talent and defense, but quarterback play makes a huge difference, and Nick Foles outplayed Mitchell Trubisky in this game when he had to.
It'd be interesting to see as we move on there, the Philadelphia circumstance is going to be with regard to the quarterback situation, because it's no longer that open and shut, I don't think. Do you?
Oh, no, you can't let him go. I'm sorry. And I know that God, how many times have we had this conversation over the last month? One guy's 30, one guy's 26. Why the 26-year-old guy gets to be the quarterback of the future in Philadelphia, I don't know. And if they ever beat the Saints next weekend, oh, my God, and give themselves a chance to go back to the Super Bowl, how do you let Nick Foles go away? But let's go back to this game yesterday, because so much happened in this game. And, yes, Foles did throw a couple of picks. There were some controversial calls. But for all of the focus on the kick, and the ball was tipped, okay? It's a mitigating factor. He still missed the kick. By the way, you want to hear the stat of the year? I was reading the Chicago papers today. He had six kicks hit the upright this year.
Yeah, four in one game.
He had four in one. I was at that game. He had four in one game against Detroit, and we still lost. So, that's the difference. When you play Detroit, you can hit it four times, and you can still come out with a victory.
This guy missed eight field goals and three extra points this year. Six of those missed kicks hit the upright.
You want a coda to that, Mike?
Sitting
in the stands was Robbie Gould.
Oh, I know.
Their all-time kicker, who they let go a couple years ago, and he's only kicked, I went and looked this, since he's left, 98%, 100%, and 96% in the three seasons that he's been gone. They should have gotten him out of the stands.
Hey, you know, and Mitch and Bob, you know, I wasn't aware until after the game, until you start reading the reaction and all this stuff. I had been following the Bears, and we talked about Trubisky, and we talked about Khalil Mack and the way they could run the ball, all that stuff. But Parkey was a thing. He was a big thing all season long with Bears fans, and all of the people who said get somebody else turned out to be right yesterday. But what I was saying about the Bears is the greatest defense in the world had every opportunity to stop Mr. Foles from bringing his team down the field, completing third down passes, finally completing a fourth down pass. So I'm sorry, boo-hoo on the Bears. And yes, they can talk about the kick forever, the way they can talk about Steve Bartman forever, all that stuff, okay? But when their season was on the line, the Bears could not stop Nick Foles from taking his team down the field, oh, by the way, at Soldier Field.
Yeah, and who scores the touchdown that puts him ahead? But Golden Tate.
Just shut up.
You know, Bob, it's interesting that you bring up Golden Tate
where'd he come from, Mike?
Shut up.
You know, it's interesting, Bob. That I was just thinking that we were probably thinking along with each other. Mitch doesn't think along with us quite the same way when we think about these things. but Bob, do you think the Lions might be the problem here and not the play? You know what I'm saying? That there might be a culture over there at Ford Field, because all Golden Tate had to do was get out of Detroit to have a moment like he had yesterday. And so the pattern of Detroit giving really good professional athletes to other teams, Bobby, it continues.
Just they did win in 57, if I'm not mistaken.
Footnote. So, Golden Tate has now won more playoff games than the Lions have in the last 20-plus years by himself. And if you throw Eric Ebron on Saturday, the Indianapolis Colts, two Detroit ball catchers have now won more playoff games than the Lions have won in the last 60 years.
And Matthew Stafford wants to stay, Mitch. And if we could just get poor Matt out of Detroit and to another team, prosperity would be just around the corner.
I'm shifting out of a mercy call to leave me alone. Two drives here that if you go over and look at the drive chart, it's almost all punt, 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 three plays, punt, five plays, punt, three, punt, field goal, interception early on. Two drives down the stretch. Chicago goes 80 yards.
Yep.
Trubisky looked very, very young yesterday. There were a lot of passes, both Trubisky and later we'll talk about Lamar Jackson, that just didn't get to their receivers. You know, they just hit the ground, or way over guys' heads. I mean, the accuracy that we normally associate and almost marvel at regularly in the NFL, where, wow, look at that quarterback place that ball in the guy's hands between two receivers. It was not on display in the playoffs because of the tough defenses and the pressure that these guys were under. Somehow Mitchell Trubisky, down the stretch, finds magic a couple of times. Remember, that drive started at the Chicago 20. They were kind of meandering along. They had a third and 11. He makes that one. And then on the very next series, he throws 34 yards to Bellamy, which was huge for them.
Great throw.
And then he hits Robinson.
Great throw, Mitch. A great throw.
Great throw. And then he hits Robinson, another great throw. And they hit the two-point conversion attempt. But they don't hit the two-point conversion attempt, which leaves them where they are, which, of course, would have been the same, I guess, with a field goal. Field goal would have been to tie it. That's one drive. All right, the Eagles come out. They punt. Takes 2 minutes. Chicago, three and out. And then Nick Foles goes on his, what's now going to be, part of his legacy there. They start at their own 40, and they march down the field, and Nick Foles makes that play, comes up with the play. Okay, we can't just talk about Bobby finding Golden Tate. He came up with that play on the sidelines. If you read all the accounts.
It was his call. Yeah,
it was his call.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He said they blitz on these kinds of attempts at fourth down. They just send everybody, shift the pocket, and let me find somebody good who can catch it. And apparently he came into the huddle and called it like he was calling a preseason
play. Hey, Mitch, did you see how close that pass came to getting batted down?
Yep. Well, that's the difference. That's the difference.
And by the way, as we were talking about Trubisky, okay, because I was really impressed the way to, because you find out, can you take your team down the field in a moment like that? He did what he was supposed to do in that moment. There were 8 starting quarterbacks in the NFL this past weekend. You know who threw for the most yards this weekend? And the only guy to throw for 300 yards? Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah. Well, a lot of that was chunk plays in that last quarter.
The fact that we had just one 300-yard passer in the season in which we had, countless inflated stats shows you how good the defense were.
And Bob and Mitch, here's the thing. When they got the big kick return after the touchdown, after the Eagles missed the two-point conversion, and you're looking at that and you're thinking, oh, my God, how different is everything if it's 18-15 instead of 16-15? The Bears were all set up, okay? The Bears were all set up. And could they have gotten a little closer? Maybe they could have gotten a little closer. But it was destined that one of these games had to come down to a kick. I mean, I can't, yeah. You know, it always happens in the playoffs, and it happened in the last game of the weekend yesterday. And I will say this, from everything I know about Mr. Parkey's performance afterwards, and I've talked about this, you guys have heard me talk about this on TV and here, there have been some memorable stand-up performances I have seen covering sports. The most memorable was Dennis Eckersley, after he gave up Kirk's home run, stood there that night, and answered every question for an hour until the last radio question had been asked, okay? And Parkey yesterday sat there in front of his locker and was a stand-up guy. Will he be on the team next year? I doubt it, okay? Mm-hmm. But if that's his last moment as a Bear, it shouldn't just be remembered for a missed kick. It should be remembered a little bit for the grace he showed after the game.
Yeah, well, no, good luck with that, Mike. You're right, of course, but I don't know that that's going to be the way. My understanding is he's got a long-term contract, I believe, or, you know, I don't know. We'll see. I know
well,
it's football.
We have to credit the Philadelphia defense here, though, something that, you know, when it gets lost in the Nick Foles adoration and some of their wide receivers as well. When you hold a team at home to 15 points, they're good. I mean, that defense is coming back around. They weren't earlier in the year. The whole team wasn't what it is earlier in the year. And what's going to be interesting is now they play the Saints, and it was the game against the Saints where they got smoked, remember? I mean, yep. They weren't even in it. And that apparently was the turnaround point for the season. You know, the locker room started turning on itself, and everyone had to look in the mirror. And shortly thereafter, they made the switch to Foles a couple games later. And now here they are going down to New Orleans again. The Philadelphia Eagles are just a, you know, pick against them at your own risk, because the Nick Foles chapter on this stuff, it feels almost, you know, surreal. It feels like it's science fiction-y a little bit that he should, especially a game that he starts with a couple interceptions and ends up finishing the way it is. And then, you know, let's face it, the kick goes through and we're not having this discussion. But no. What do you think of the Eagles' chances the rest of the way? They are the defending Super Bowl champs.
They're going into what has become, by acclamation, the toughest place to play in the contemporary NFL. So it's going to be, but if a team, you know, you say to yourself, well, okay, that's fine. But if any team should be able to stand up to that, it's the defending champion with the, so I still think we're all going to pick the Saints. I certainly will declare that right now. I'm not going to deviate on that. But I'll be a little less stunned if they win than I would have been, you know, 24 hours ago.
Nick Foles, in a dome stadium, in the biggest game of his life, last February, beat Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. And we've talked about this for the last year. If you didn't know anybody's resume watching that game that day, if you just watched the guy playing quarterback for the Patriots and the guy playing quarterback for the Eagles, you would have thought the guy playing quarterback for the Eagles was the better quarterback last year. So the idea that he can't go in to New Orleans and win this game, to me, is preposterous. There's going to be some muscle memory. There is. There's going to be some muscle memory for that game next weekend. And Mitch, you're right to talk about the defense. Remember when we were hearing in the middle of the year how many defensive backs they had gone through because of injury?
13.
They can cover the hell out of the other team now.
Right?
Is that
the number I heard? 13?
Well, yeah.
I heard that number. I
thought
what?
It was a dozen, Bobby, but it's probably 13.
Oh, my
but they
God.
But they can cover now. They can cover now. And the question is always going to be, I was talking to Ernie Accorsi about this the other day, can they get in Breeze's face? Because so much of games like this with big passers comes down, can you put them down or can you make them rush?
Right.
I don't know if that's going to be the case. But if they can put some pressure on Breeze, even in that place, I think the Eagles can absolutely win this football game.
Mm. Well, that's a great transition for the other game yesterday, Sunday, in terms of quarterback pressure, getting in people's faces. Lamar Jackson is kind of the beginning, middle, and end of the story of the game between the Chargers and the Ravens, even though the Chargers won the game, and by rights, you ought to be talking about the team that won more than the team that lost. But from a start of three fumbles for the Ravens within the first eight plays from seven defensive backs on every single play. I've never seen that happen before. The Chargers put seven defensive backs on every single play, which means you got four linemen, and that's it. You know, and everybody else is up there trying to stop for the sole purpose of harassing and messing up Lamar Jackson.
A 21-year-old quarterback.
Yep. Kid gets, has an awful first three quarters of a game. Goes 2 hours without completing a pass, and then has a charge at the end that almost wins it, and then fumbles the game away the same way that he started it. I don't know how this isn't the Lamar Jackson saga, even though it's the Los Angeles Chargers win. And so I'd like to hear your guys' thoughts on that. And did Harbaugh do the right thing by sticking with him at the start of the fourth quarter when they were down 23-3?
All right, I'll take these questions in. I'll take the last one first. The way the game played out, yes, he was right, and I would have made the move. I will tell you.
You would have made the move.
I would have made the move to Flacco.
Yeah, I would have too.
Okay, but I would have been wrong. And again, yes, ball control is going to be an issue for this. You know, he doesn't protect the ball well enough. The ball is always hanging out there, and a guy can swipe it. And finally did and took his team's season. But I have to tell you, as bad as he was, Mitch and Bob, for those 2 hours, that kid showed me something by bringing him down the field for two more touchdowns. And again, we were that close. And you could tell the Chargers weren't in a free fall, okay? That I thought something crazy was going to happen, and the Ravens might win the game. But it, as crazy as it was, and that stat stayed up there the whole game, two for seven and whatever, 17 yards, whatever it was, okay? He ends up nearly throwing for 200 yards in this game and ends up with way more passing yards than Phillip Rivers did, and his team and Rivers' team won the game.
Well, the answer to the question is that, in the end, is that, yes, I was with to make it 3-for-3. I was saying, okay, time for Flacco. And that John Harbaugh's going to have some
explaining. After you had spookily predicted
going to have some explaining to do.
Brian.
I definitely was in that bandwagon at that point in time saying, what is he waiting for? And, of course, he turned out to be right. We turned out to be wrong. And the faith that they showed in that kid is going to have long-lasting effects in that locker room.
Yep.
He's coming out looking good, even though they lost that game, Harbaugh, because he stuck with that kid and he showed the world why he did. The fumble thing is awful and it's correctable. And I just was thinking during the course of this game, this kid is so exciting, but we've got golf coaches, we've got batting coaches. There's got to be a quarterback passing instructor. I'm very serious. They have to get him to quarterback camp in the off season to straighten out his throwing mechanics. If that's the problem, because he's got too much else to offer. And he did make it a game when we totally thought. I mean, guys, at 12-0, I at halftime, seldom. I won't say never. Seldom has 12-0 looked more like 112-0. They were so impotent in the first half. So impotent. And what, they have three first downs in three quarters? Is that correct?
It's crazy.
They were bad up till 9 minutes left in the game. Okay, that's when Baltimore got the ball. 9 minutes and 9 seconds left in the entire game. By that point, the ship you thought had already sailed on making the change to Flacco. I thought that the change to Flacco should have come the series before. When it was just under 15 minutes left, they said, all right, we got a quarter to go. We need three touchdowns. That's passing, generally, right? That's how you do that, is passing. Get the better passer in there, and let's see what we can do. And Harbaugh, we'll never know how close he came. He admitted that he thought about it. I do think that would have been the right move. And, Mike, we don't know what would have happened. I mean, you say, obviously, the way it worked out, it was wrong. Well, how do you know? If Flacco had come in and had one of those moments, because remember, there's no tape on him. There's no prep for him. The whole game plan that the Chargers had with those seven defensive backs is not what you do against Joe Flacco. So all of a sudden, you got to change your defense and do all the rest of it. So I don't know if it would have worked out or not. And we'll never know. Yeah. I also think that some of the stats that you mentioned, you know, he ended up with more yards than Rivers and all that. At 23-3, You just play to make sure that nobody gets behind you. You're effectively playing, you know, a sort of prevent defense. And so a lot of those nines and sevens and tens that he dinked and got, they were happy to give up. What they weren't happy to give up was on that drive that started with 9 minutes to go, two huge plays, fourth and 11, trailing 23-3 with 7 minutes to go, okay? 23-3, 7 minutes ago, it's 4th and 11. What do you think your odds are at that moment? And that's when he threw down the middle to Snead for 29 yards. And everyone said, whoa, well, where'd that pass come from? And the very next play hits Crabtree for 31 yards. Right there, that's 70 yards and two passes. And suddenly they're on the board. That was the turning point. That was where his confidence seemed to return. Three and out for the Chargers on the next play. And then he takes them 12 plays, 80 yards to bring it up again. And you know, now, all right, you're talking, you know, coming back. But I still don't know if that was the right move. And as much as you have to say, you know, give him credit for bringing him back, you also have to fault him for the hole that they were in, because three quarters of a game to be ineffective is really hard to crawl out of. And in the end, they couldn't.
I'll say is I agree with what you said, Mitch. But if the Chargers were playing don't let anybody get behind you, well, they sure let Michael Crabtree get behind them.
Right, they screwed up.
So all I'm saying is I'll stand with Harbaugh on this. Even though the way the game played out, I don't think that there's any chance that Joe Flacco comes off the bench against that defense yesterday and has his team right near midfield in the last minute with a chance that you would have bet anything that they weren't going to have an hour before. Okay, and again, the long-term ramifications of this for Harbaugh, for the Ravens, and for Lamar Jackson are going to be as good as they can be off a game that you lost at home in the playoffs. And you know, listen. Yes, I would have made the move, and I believe that not only would I have been wrong, I think they would have ended up getting beaten worse than they did.
You know, as a general rule, when we, and I think historically, when you see these low-scoring scores and then the abstract, you figure, oh, what a crappy game, because we're so attuned, particularly this year when we're attuned to the offense. But the fact of the matter is that both of those Sunday games, including the 16-15 game, I thought were immensely entertaining.
Yes.
I was totally and properly, as a sports fan, just generic sports fan, in this important football weekend, coming away saying, you know, damn it, you know, I invested two full days into this, but all four times I thought I got my money's worth, my emotional money's worth. How's that?
Bobby and Mitch, none of these games were works of art. Okay. None of these games we're going to say, other than, you know, we'll remember Philadelphia, Chicago because of the way it ended. Okay. The fact is, we had three road teams win this weekend, and we had a two-point game, a six-point game, and a one-point game. And so that was pretty great drama that we got in all different venues. So now we move to Saturday night. We move to Saturday night. And a 24-22 game with the Cowboys and the Seahawks. And I have to say, my admiration for Dak Prescott continues to grow. Because what was it, 3rd and 14, where he made that run that got him down and set him up to score the touchdown? He makes plays when he's got to make plays. He made throws to Cooper when he had to make throws to him. He's got Ezekiel Elliott. You know, this is a pretty damn good balanced team. And the only sad part of this game was an injury that I don't plan to watch again.
Yeah. Well, they're not going to give you that opportunity, thank God. And the only return or report, at least from Adam Schefter, who generally gets things right, is that it's not going to be as catastrophic as we first feared, that he can, even can talk about returning next year, which is good. You're right. There's no question about that. So,
yeah, I said when we did our show on Friday that I thought the Cowboys were going to win. I thought Seattle was erratic, and much as you don't want to bet against Russell Wilson, he's a lot easier to bet against when he's not in Seattle on the road. And you know, they had their moment for Russell Wilson magic. It was an ugly early part of the game. Saturday's games to me were nowhere near as good as Sunday's. And yeah, you're right, Mike. They ended close, but you had to endure 2.5 hours of kind of boring, crappy football to see a half hour where it kind of got close. And Russell Wilson had that moment, you remember, in the fourth quarter when Dak Prescott got intercepted. Remember? And they're driving down in what could have been, you know, the end of the game. I mean, they're up 17-14. They move all the way down to, I think it was a penalties involved or something like that. And he throws it deep, and he gets picked off. So now Seattle has the ball, and there's like 9 minutes left in the game in the fourth quarter. This is when Russell Wilson starts to shine, right? This is when Russell Wilson leads you back in the fourth quarter. Yeah. Well, what happens? Penalty holding. Penalty unnecessary roughness. Ends up with a second and 22. And then Tyler Lockett gets hurt on that play, and they don't do anything with it. They punt it back, and that's when the series begins. 11 plays, 5 minutes, 63 yards, and Dak Prescott takes him down to make it 24-14, which turns out to be, you know, an unsurmountable lead, and that's how they won it. The Dallas defense, in other words, was huge in this thing. And, you know, we don't talk a lot about the Dallas defense. We're always talking about Elliott and Prescott and now Amari Cooper. But the defense was very, very big to stop the Seattle Seahawks when they had that sort of moment that they become the Seahawks with Russell Wilson. And that's why they're advancing. Not just Dak Prescott's play. Their defense played really well.
Can I say one other thing about the Seattle Seahawks and Coach Carroll? He sure can pick them with offensive coordinators, can't he? He gets one play call. The play calls him right out of winning a Super Bowl that the Seahawks should have won against the Patriots. And what, guys, you watched, what was Brian Schottenheimer thinking Saturday night? Did they really think that they could keep Russell Wilson under wraps for the whole game until they really needed him at the end and run the freaking ball the rest of the night? What was that all about?
Yeah. They must have seen something.
But it wasn't working. It wasn't working. It no. wasn't working.
Yeah. I'm glad that Dallas won, though, in that I want to see how far this group can go. You know, no knock on Seattle. It would have been fine if they won, too. But we've sort of seen that story play out. This era of Dak Prescott, Zeke Elliott, and all that, I want them to get, you know, up in the air. You know, they churn a lot on the ground, and then it doesn't go where you think they're going to go. They have moments of promise, and it doesn't. And a first-round exit in the playoffs is almost like you didn't get there, you know, especially on wild card weekend. It's by the time the whole tapestry of the season is played out, you can't even remember what happened on the very first wild card weekend. So I want to see Dallas take on the Rams, and I want to see if they're ready for that kind of moment. I mean, you would think that the Rams would be heavily favored, and I imagine that they will. But
why do you think they'll be heavily favored?
Heavy for the postseason, 4 points, 8 points, 5 points. But I think that all depends on Gurley.
A little of the luster is off the Rams, and particularly off Goff. So it'll be interesting to see that.
And if Gurley's not 100%, they're not the same team.
I'm kind of with you, Mitch, and as someone who I have to, you know, full disclosure time, the candor is our middle name here. Someone who earlier in the season labeled the Dallas Cowboys as a JAT, paraphrasing, just another team, and poo-pooed them and scoffed. And when they were 3-5, I said, yeah, that's who they are. I'm now very curious to see how far
they made
a
trade, though, Bob. New information.
Oh, the trade, yes.
And okay, against the Seahawks on Saturday night, they, you know, they only scored 24 points, and they were kind of hanging on a little bit at the end. Okay, Dak Prescott throws for 226, Zeke runs for 137, and Amari Cooper gets 100 receiving yards. That's nearly 600 yards from the three of those guys. If that's the template they take into the Los Angeles Coliseum, to me, this is just to me, this is a pick'em game next weekend. I honestly believe that.
And what's going to be interesting is to see if this pattern continues of so much for the high-flying offenses. You know, if this game is played in the 20s, And the Rams don't play games in the 20s. I think Dallas has a really good chance at this. And along with the three names that you mentioned there, Mike, you've also got to mention names like Van Der Esch and Jalen Smith and Awuzie and DeMarcus Lawrence and Randy Gregory. Their defense has got some star players on it. They're good. And that's what's going to be the challenge for Goff and Gurley and the Rams. And now I think the Cowboys are playing a little bit with house money. You know, they got over that hump, And now they're out there like, let's see how far we can go. The Rams, when you have a season like they do, and you're playing at home, the pressure starts to become on you. And I never liked the bye week because of that. We've all witnessed this, and we've watched a lot of football between the three of us. It doesn't always help you. Sometimes it does, and you get, you know, your guys back, and we'll see for New England, for example, if Gronkowski can actually play one healthy game because he's had 2 weeks. But sometimes there's a little rust that you have to shake off, or just the momentum that took you towards the end of the season, especially if you didn't really play hard your last game because you sort of clinched things. You've now gone a couple of weeks without that must-win thing. And meanwhile, you're facing a team that had to obviously do a must-win the week before, most likely on the road, or you know, and they're coming into your building. And, you know, sometimes that evens out the odds from what would have been if these two teams met in the regular season. You would have thought the Rams would have been a heavy favorite.
And Mitch, you are right, by the way. You are right about the point. It opened at a touchdown for the Rams. Opened at a touchdown. They are a touchdown favorite at home against the Cowboys. And, boy, I'll tell you what, I don't bet. But if I did bet, I'd jump on that.
Before we exit this, we have one more game to talk about, too, and I can't wait to do that, by the way. But just let's state the most amount of points scored this weekend was 24 in this season of.
I know, it's great, isn't it?
Of gargantuan numbers. And 24.
On Throwback Weekend, Mitch and Bob, we even brought back the drop kick. Back the drop kick.
We did.
Because after Sebastian Janikowski got hurt, not only did the Seahawks not have another place kicker, when they kicked off with a drop kick. And everything, so much of that game was determined by this injury to Sebastian, the 97-year-old Sebastian Janikowski being out of the game at the end because I'm going to talk about it in my parting shot. $1 billion changed hands because he couldn't kick.
All right, let's do that last game. Houston, Indianapolis was the first game of the weekend.
I'm
going to
demand the floor immediately, and then I'm going to shut up. And here's what all I have to say is that I'm seldom right, but there was one thing I was right about all year. And you know I said it, and you can go check the tape, and I said it last Friday morning. And I never for a minute this season believed in the Houston Texans. Not for a millisecond, not for a nanosecond did I believe in them. Okay, thank you very much. The floor is yours.
Even when they were winning 9 in a row.
Right. I did not believe in them at all. Period. You're right.
In this game, ironically, you know, here we were talking a lot about Lamar Jackson and his performance and how much that kind of dictated the overall thing. But there's no getting around that Deshaun Watson just laid an egg. And for all the accolades and all the praise that he earned during the course of the season, he took a huge step backwards in this game and is going to have to overcome that coming back next year. He was just not good. There were times where you were wondering who he was throwing to or did he see the guy's hands versus their feet. He got sacked 3 times. He got hit a bunch of other times. And, you know, don't go by the total number of yards. That's not what matters in this thing. When it counted, he wasn't getting the stuff done. He got picked. He had a quarterback rating of a 23. You know, meanwhile, it doesn't help you when across the way, Andrew Luck's just looking like a machine again. And even though he got picked once, Marlon Mack, sorry, I mispronounced his name, and rightfully so, because I didn't even know who this guy was, had 148 yards rushing against
the best
Houston.
Running back of the weekend, Mitch.
Yeah.
The best running
Marlon
back of the weekend.
Marlon Mack?
South Florida. Yep, South Florida zone.
Holy cow.
No, it's by the way, again, I just said this about the Super Bowl. If you didn't know anything about anything, you just watched the game, okay? With the sound off, who would you have thought the better quarterback was? If you watched all 4 games this weekend, would you not think that the Indianapolis Colts were the best and most complete team you watched play football this weekend?
Yes.
The way they won their game, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was dominant. It was 21-0 until the fourth quarter. You know, Houston was never really in it. It was 14-0 after the first quarter. So yeah, I agree with you, Michael. Silent version without all the hyperbole from the announcers and all that. And it looks like, you know, Indianapolis is just dusting off Houston and, okay, who's next? And boy, that's going to be a great game this weekend. I mean,
oh, them and the Chiefs. Oh my goodness! And Mitch, listen, we all got swept away by the way Andrew Luck played once they got really good after 1-5. Okay, and rightfully so. And the world is now discovering Marlon Mack and T.Y. Hilton. Is, you know, we were worried about his health. Well, he turned out to be just fine in that game. And if you didn't know what year it was with Hilton, you'd think it was any year where he was playing at a high level. So when you watch this team. I'm surprised at how good their defense is. And all of a sudden, that shutout of the Cowboys, Mitch and Bob, doesn't look so aberrational when you actually watch them for a whole game.
No, they're really got it all going. There's no question. And you got to be happy for Luck. By the way, are you guys aware of the Captain Andrew Luck?
It's thing? Funny. Yeah.
Is it great or what?
Yeah, but he does look like a 1800 Civil War guy.
People who don't know, there's I urge you, if you're in the Twitter world, to go check out the Captain Andrew Luck tweets, and whoever does this is, he's terrific. And I just want to these are tweets in which Captain Andrew Luck, as a Confederate captain, just writes back to his mother after these games, and they're hilarious.
By the way, when you look, we were talking about, the fact that the Cowboys can beat you with their quarterback, with their running back, and with their star wide receiver. Okay, the Colts can do the same thing. And Bob, but isn't it lucky? It's not just a wide receiver with the Colts that they have a reliable tight end. That they can throw the ball to really need a completion.
You get a guy like that, Mike. You make sure you lock him up, right? You don't let him.
Let him get near the airport, Bob. Don't let a guy like that out of town, do you?
No. All right. The day we start glorifying Eric Ebron is the
my
day
man.
That
we need to have our podcast license
pulled away. Yeah, it's Andrew Luck throwing to Eric Ebron. It's not Eric.
Okay,
Ebron. But I do want to say this about the Colts. They are the hottest team as far as I'm concerned.
That's what I was going to ask you, Mitch. Don't you believe, as hot as they are, they can go into Kansas City and win a game?
They can win it. They can beat anybody right now. They look at what they did. I mean, first of all, they ended the regular season with 4 wins, including a shutout of the Cowboys, and beat the Houston on the road. Now they've beaten them again. But remember, they had a winner out in the final game of the season against Tennessee. So they've been in the playoffs now for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And they're going out and playing the Kansas City Chiefs, who have had a week off. And I'm sorry, here's the elephant in the room. No pun intended with the word elephant. Andy Reid's playoff record is sub .500.
Right.
And you can talk all you want about regular season until he changes that. All the Patrick Mahomeses in the world are going to be a question mark. And boy, isn't it something to see, Patrick Mahomes going against Andrew Luck, who Andrew Luck was a little bit of Patrick Mahomes in his rookie season, until he got hurt. The sky seemed to be the limit for him, and he was remarkable the way he just stepped in and started playing. And now Andrew Luck's been around for a while, and he brings this very, very hot team into a stadium where they, granted, it's a tough place to play. Kansas City's a good stadium, and it's good home field advantage. And I think Kansas City has more tools, more offensive weapons than any team in the league. I mean, from Kelce to Hill to all the rest of these guys, and obviously Mahomes. But if there's any team I don't want to see, it's actually Indianapolis, the way that they're playing right
don't
now.
Don't you, Mitch and Bob, don't you think that, we had two incredibly dramatic, no, three turnarounds this season, okay? And two of the teams are still playing. The Texans are not. Texans were 0-3, 1-9 in a row. Okay, they do what they do. And obviously the Cowboys, after they get Amari Cooper, they're 3-5. They are where they are. But don't you think, if you add it all up, and the way we're talking about the Colts now, and where they were at 1-5, are they not the greatest, not only surprise of the season, but maybe the best story of the season?
Yeah, that's true.
They lost to the Jets. They got rung up for 48 by the Jets, Bob.
Yeah, no. Well, no, I'm not going to dispute that. It's an amazing story. And
the Jets can only beat the Lions that way, but they beat the Colts that way, too. Sorry, Mitch.
Yeah, that's pile on. Go ahead, all of you, pile on.
But aren't they? There's no better story as we now reach, you know, the Elite Eight, okay? There's no better story than the Indianapolis Colts right now.
There's no better story. Reich taking the job when, you know, he's the rebound off the girl who spurned them. And he says, well, I'll come and I'll take the team. They start 1-5 and they all wonder, you know, should we have gotten the guy from New England instead, and maybe we should have upped the offer. And then they go on this ridiculous tear. They seem to be very unified. Luck is a really good leader. He's very smart as a player. As I said, you lay out put all the teams down there and say, who's the one you don't want to play? I'd say it's Indianapolis right now. I'm not saying they're the best team. I'm saying they're the one I don't want to play right now. They're capable of winning any one game anywhere, including in Kansas City. So I think we've set ourselves up for a great, playoff weekend.
And Mitch and Bob, we've kind of taken a look at three out of the four games next weekend. The one we have not taken a look at, and I think the Patriots were rooting Ryan like hell for the Houston Texans. They wanted the Houston Texans to come to Foxborough, and now Phillip Rivers and the Chargers come instead. And Bob, in a year where the Patriots haven't been up to their usual high standards, and the Chargers have been above their previous standards, that's a pretty interesting football game, even if it is in Foxborough for the Chargers.
Well, number one, you're 100% correct that the entire six-state region wanted to see the Texans here because of their sorry performances.
Yeah.
So that didn't happen. And secondly, they did not want to see, however, the Ravens because – they were the chic team that you didn't want to play, A. And B, Harbaugh stands up to Belichick better than
he's got
than
priors.
Anybody.
He's got priors against Belichick.
Yeah, and now here comes a rookie. We talk about Belichick against rookie QBs, and that's an amazing stat over the years. But now we've got Belichick against rookie coach, which is very interesting.
By the way, can we talk for 1 second about the job Anthony Lynn has done? And by the way, you know, you already talked about it, Mitch. The scheme they came up for the Ravens yesterday.
To do that, you know, in the playoffs, a safer thing is to just go with what you know the normal thing is. Hats off to him and his ingenuity. And I'll be very curious to see what they throw up against New England, because what they did to Lamar Jackson is what you have to do to Tom Brady. You have to go get him. And this, we've talked about the Patriots all season of being very underwhelming first place team. And, you know, they're all right, the records really don't matter a lot, but the Chargers did win more games than New England did. And they're coming in there with a defense, much as Phillip Rivers is the story sentimentally, defense is going to determine this thing. And if that defense can do to Tom Brady even half of what it did to Lamar Jackson, they have a really good chance to win. And I'm the Pats do not impress me all year. You know, at some point you got to take reality for what it is. You know, we keep denying what we're seeing because, well, they're the Patriots, so they can play like that. They'll come the playoffs, they'll be a different team. And I guess until it happens, that's the safe bet to go. But 1 year, they're just not going to deliver. And I think that this game has a chance to be that game, a chance. But it's going to be on the defense. It's not going to be on Phillip Rivers.
You know, one thing you have to keep in mind when you're evaluating the Patriots annually is that unlike any other contender, they start off each season with a guarantee of 5 or maybe 6 wins guaranteed because of the conference, the division they play in. And that's, you know, that pads.
I saw the stats. I think Dan Shaughnessy had them in the Globe on Sunday, Bob. The stats of what the weak opposition they have faced. And Mitch, what he was basically saying is they start every year knowing that nobody else in their division is going to win more than 8 games. It's quite remarkable over the run of Brady. Right, Bob?
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, the Bills particularly are just, but I mean, it's the three of them together, and Miami's going nowhere again. So anyway, that's A. Mitch, the Patriots remain a mystery to us. We have gone up and down. We in New England, we've gone up and down with them all year, and they're coming off a little bit of a heartening game against the Jets, although it was against the Jets, and who were ready to go home before the game started, I think. But they did look better, and whether it was the Jets or whether it was anybody, Brady looked better than even he did the week before. before. He moved better. He looked better. His passes were more accurate. He's had a and Gronkowski did have a moment of Gronkism when he the play was called back, but he had one of those great Gronk plays where he caught a pass and then he had lots of yak. He carried somebody about dragged somebody about 10 yards. It was a 29-yard gain that was negated by a stupid penalty. But fact is, it looked like made him look like himself. We don't know if that's just a snapshot of you know, just an aberrational thing or not. But they did look better. And by the way, their defense has quietly gotten better in all phases. So they may be a little bit better than some people
only
think.
A fool picks against the Patriots when they've had an off week. They're playing at home,
yeah,
and they're in the playoffs. We know that. So I might be a fool. And I bet it's been suggested many times.
No, you're not.
But
Detroit has not dragged you down. No, you're not a fool.
Detroit beat the Patriots.
Yes, they did, Mitch. Yeah. Oh my God, I forgot.
26-10. But we'll see. All right, let's get to the big game this evening.
Hey, Mitch, before we get to the big game, can I make just a completely irrelevant aside about
not if it's about the Lions, please.
No. These Fansville commercials in college football, I'm watching one the other day, and I'm thinking, why do these people look familiar? Who would have ever thought that Les Miles would get the acting bug, okay? And I'm looking at the Mitch, I'm looking at the sheriff, and I'm thinking, God, he looks familiar. It's Brian Bosworth.
Yeah. I can't tell you what that's for. Because that's my thing with commercials, like the ones that are interesting. I go, oh, that was funny. I have no idea what product it was, and I won't buy it because I can't even remember what it was. But interesting commercials. And, yeah, those things are funny. What are they for?
I don't. Who the hell knows? Even Eddie George is in them. Okay, so we got Clash of the Titans on Monday night.
Again.
And by the way, why are they playing this game in Santa Clara? Could somebody explain to me
somebody put up some money, the wave dollar bills under somebody's nose? That's why. There's no other reason.
It's
not even
game?
Sold out, is it?
No, the ticket prices are dropping, okay? And by the way, Mitch, we talked about this when the Super Bowl was in Santa Clara. I was staying with my sis in San Francisco, and in my mind, Santa Clara was just a little past Palo Alto, okay? And I said to my sister, how long do you think it'll take us to get down there tomorrow, like 35, 40 minutes? And she said, what are you talking about? Do you know where Santa Clara is? Santa Clara is 50 miles from downtown San Francisco. 50.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing like this in American sports where a team like the 49ers plays that far. You know, MetLife Stadium is 7 miles from Times Square. Okay, it's over in Jersey, but it's 7 miles. Anyway, so how this game ended up there, I don't know. But it's the game that we thought we were going to see. It's the game we wanted to see. And I will set it up this way, okay? Is the kid from Georgia, Trevor Lawrence, is he going to show up and be the Trevor Lawrence that we have seen the entire season? I'll throw this to you first, Mitch. Or is he going to play like Lamar Jackson played against the Chargers yesterday?
No, and based on his history, he doesn't get rattled. Again, until you play Alabama, I guess it's always different. But he has been calm, even keeled. He's a little Nick Foles-like in that fashion, considering how young he is. I don't think he's going to freak out, but I do think that the defense is going to get all after him. And I mean, there's... I love Dabo Sweeney's take on this. The ROY, have you heard of that? That's what he calls it.
Rest y'all.
Yeah.
Rest of y'all.
Rest of y'all, meaning Alabama, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then the ROY. And it's a great, you know, playing possum position for him because the truth is if he wins this game, he's 2-1 in championships against Nick Saban at Nick Saban's absolute pinnacle. So he ain't really a ROY. But if he loses, he's 1-3, like a lot of other teams are. I think that Trevor Lawrence is probably the X factor in this game. You know that Tua is going to have a great game. You know those receivers. He's just got this ridiculous core of receivers.
Yep.
The running backs are one right after the other. They could literally have two guys get injured and still have a great running attack. So Trevor Lawrence is the X factor. You know, then third downs are the X factor. If they can keep Alabama and Tua off the field and not let them just run rampant with points, and score some themselves. They make it a game. And you know these games, guys. You know this. I mean, at least this is my observation. You might as well throw out what happens in the first quarter and even into the second quarter. And halftime analysis is going. These things feel like Russian novels, these national championship and playoff games, especially when they involve Alabama and Clemson. And it's only when you sort of get to the fourth quarter. I mean, look at the one where the first half where Jalen Hurts was the quarterback and then all of a sudden Tua was. We talk about tale of two halves. So you can't predict anything that's really going to happen in this thing until you sort of see what the landscape looks like in the fourth quarter. And then good luck trying to guess how they're going to end.
I think this kid will definitely not wilt or anything like that. It's just a matter of the competition. The fact is, he's going to be facing an upgrade in competition. It's just that simple. That's the issue. Upgrade in competition. A defense unlike any that he's faced in the ACC or elsewhere. Period. I'm just think about this, guys. I mean, just throwing this out there. A year ago today, none of the three of us, and practically no one outside of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, or Honolulu, Hawaii, knew of the existence on this earth of a young man named Tua Tagovailoa, and he entered into our consciousness and as the game progressed last year. I'm just stop back and think about that for a second.
Bobby, and you know what? So now here's what we have in the matchup of the big game this year. Okay, a grizzled 20-year-old. Veteran of a game like this against the 19-year-old freshman, and we are going to find out if the 19-year-old freshman from Georgia can show up in a moment like this the way Tua did when he was a freshman and got thrown into this game again, like he dropped out of the clouds, okay, and somehow found an opening and ended up in this stadium. And yeah, we got a 20-year-old and a 19-year-old playing in this game at quarterback. Mm-hmm. And the one concern I have about Alabama, and if I bet my own money, I'd bet on Alabama because I think Tua's going to show up bigger than Lawrence in this game. I do have some questions about the Alabama defense because No way on this planet, even if you're playing a soft defense after you get up 28-0, there's no way that it should have even been a remotely interesting game against Kyler Murray in Oklahoma. And they did move the ball on him, and they did throw the ball around on him. And Clemson's not going to fall behind 28-0, I don't think, tonight. So if there's one question mark I have about Alabama, I don't think its defense is as formidable now as it was early in the season.
And, Mike, it has been categorically declared that the reason Dabo made this quarterback switch at all when he did it.
Getting ready
was
for this game. Yeah.
For this game. That you have to pass. He's not going to cram the ball down Alabama's throats.
No.
So
even though he does have Etienne, you know, who's a hell of a player.
And he's got
1,500 yards and like 22 touchdowns or 20 something.
Yeah, Travis Etienne, right. But he doesn't think he can do it. He needs both. Maybe he'll break one. That's fine. But, it's there's enough uncertainty, though, I think, to make this really good. And Alabama should be favored, yes, because they're Alabama. But, boy, Clemson's got a lot going for it. I got to pose this rhetorical question because it's one I'm fascinated with. And I'm curious to see. I really don't know which way either you guys are going to go in this, very simply. And this is the simple question. Is this dominance, this tyranny of these two teams now in year four of their of their rivalry, year three of a championship game confrontation, good or bad for college football?
Glad you asked that because I meant to say that before we even got started. Let's make sure we throw that question out there because it is kind of the larger question. My answer, one of the three of us, my answer is it's bad for the sport until tonight. In other words, you kind of know this is coming, and it renders most of the other games sort of insignificant. And you're always asking yourself, yeah, but how would they fare against Alabama? And you look at the rankings, and you say, okay, Alabama's number one because they tend to start at number one, and Clemson is number two or three. And oh, that other team, that Notre Dame or that Ohio State or that Oklahoma or whatever, could they get in there? But the truth is you kind of feel like that, that if they actually played one another, they wouldn't win. And that's bad because it basically renders every other game that anybody else is playing in kind of meaningless. And yet, it's great when you get to tonight because you want to see it again. You want it to see Golden State, Cleveland. You want to see the stars play the stars, but it just as in the NBA, which is kind of the most closest parallel I can think of, the regular season becomes, and even the early rounds of the playoffs become kind of insignificant because you know this is coming. So my take is bad, 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 bad until the final night. Okay, good.
And it's interesting, Mitch, because we talked about the game being in Santa Clara, and it's a haul for fans of both of these teams. Okay, the ticket prices, I am told, on secondary markets are dropping like crazy. I like this game. I always think this kind of rivalry is good for sports. I was fired up every time the Cavs played the Warriors or LeBron played the Warriors. Okay, but I do think, and I'll throw this to you, Bob.
Yep.
Fatigue had set in by the last final between the Cavs and the Warriors. And I do think that there is some fatigue about this one, even though they are clearly the best two teams in college football.
Well, to me, the thing that concerns me, and my answer is it's not good. And Mitch is right. He's analyzed it perfectly. It's not good until tonight. I didn't phrase it in that way in my mind, but I like it. But the reason, my concern is this, that the regionalism here is the problem, that these are two southern teams, one not so south as the other, but two southern teams. Clearly, it's a limited region, and it just douses the interest level in the West and the Midwest and forget about the Northeast, which isn't a football hat, but anyway, but in those other areas where football is important. And it would be so good if this rivalry, for example, where Alabama and I'm just throwing it out there for the sake of the argument, SC. Oh right. Boy, this then I would have no argument. We'd have I want 10 years in a row of it. Or if it were Ohio State SC or Ohio State and Texas.
Bob, that raises a question that I don't think we've ever asked one another on this for all the years. Why is the SEC? Why is the southern corner of America consistently the better place to play college football?
I think it just feeds on itself, Mitch. The SEC kind of started up again when Nick got to Tuscaloosa. And then remember those, even though they were like, it always seemed like it was 3-0, they're playing those big games against LSU.
Well, and then yeah, I but think he was at LSU before that.
I think their success then contributed to their recruiting success. I think it's helping. But in the ACC, it doesn't seem to be helping anybody tremendously except Dabo. Florida State has fallen off. You know, they're not what they were.
No.
And all of a sudden, maybe Dabo saw the future and saying, okay, I can't beat him in that conference, but I can beat him in this other conference, and here he is.
So are you saying that basically it's a one-person phenomenon, that Nick Saban, in theory, for example, if Nick Saban went to UCLA, that we might be having a whole different discussion?
I don't know. Here's what I'll say, and this will sound like a wild analogy, but it's not. Tiger Woods came along, and not only was he a great success at golf, Mitch, but his conditioning has affected an entire generation, and maybe a second generation of young golfers. Golfers did not train like this. So not only did they aspire to his sort of excellence in golf, they aspired to being in the same sort of condition. And I just think that, yes, I think that Saban, by the force of his talent and the force of his program and the force of the talent that he's been able to recruit, I think he changed everything. Yeah, I do.
The area in general is a fertile recruiting ground of the Southeast in general, and that starts with that. But clearly, this man, and I don't know what. I got to throw it, Mitch. Mitch knew him when another win. I mean, did you ever see this level?
He was not that way.
What did you see in him?
He was not that way. I saw in him, and I know Nick a bit. He was intense when he was here. He was joyless. When he was here, joyless. I don't mean that as a criticism. That was his personality. Didn't spend a lot of time laughing. Didn't spend a lot of time joking around. He was very, very serious, very intent, and very ambitious. I think he capitalized on all of those things and the steps that along the way since he left Michigan State. He didn't come in to Michigan State and dominate this place. You know, he didn't win every year he was there and clobber Michigan and all the rest of it. It wasn't a one team by no means. And then, of course, he went to LSU, and that's where he began to have this kind of success. And then, of course, he ends up in Alabama, and he's taken over the whole thing. He's only gotten by my answer to your question is he had all the traits that he has now, but they were in their embryonic stage, and they have now fully blossomed. And that same intensity is now blinding flash intensity, and that same seriousness is just 365 days instead of 345 days. And he's got the legacy now that when he walks into a recruit's house, it's over. You know, if he wants somebody, he's pretty much going to get them, and they're so deep. And it's something that I've talked about in college football and why Ohio State is better than everybody else in the Big Ten, and Alabama is better than everybody else, period. Their second guy, their third guy, their fourth guy can just step in. It's why it's so pointless. You know, I've been thinking while you guys are talking, well, let's do a little bit more about the players that are going to be involved in the game. And I'm thinking, why? There's so many of them. I mean, you just look at the list of receivers that he has, the list of running backs that he has. Any one of these guys could take over the game tonight, there's no point even predicting it. What I wondered was, because, okay, places like Alabama, Louisiana, which obviously has New Orleans, but you know, there's not a lot of professional sports in a lot of the southern states until you get down to Florida, Georgia notwithstanding, obviously with Atlanta. Do you think some of that has something to do with it? Do you think because college football is everything in some of these areas that somehow there's a bigger focus, that the kids are more intent, that the athletes
somehow,
don't want to go there? Is there something to that?
I totally believe. I mean, there's no way you – it's funny. It's a great topic for a general discussion sometime we should have, which is the different cultural aspect of being a sports fan in America and the difference between living in an urban area, as I have my whole life, and absorbing the professional culture and then having the great fortune of living a life where I'm able to travel and get out to see what else is out there. People here who only experience what we have here have not the remotest conception of what it means to be an Alabama football fan, a Kentucky basketball fan, or a Kansas basketball fan, or an Ohio State football fan. They have no conception. Meanwhile, those people who only are exposed to that for their whole life have no idea what permeates the Red Sox and Yankee rivalry. So there are two distinctly different cultures.
I'll just, before we get to parting shot, I'll just say this. He did win a national championship at LSU, which is a hop, skip, and a jump from the New Orleans Saints. Okay, that's one thing. And this guy, they knew about him in football. Ernie, of course, he wanted to hire him from Michigan State to coach the Giants 20 years ago. He knew he had worked with Belichick. He had come out of the pros, and he's, you know, again, we can't say, oh, there'll be maybe Dabo can become Nick Saban at Clemson, but I think that Saban is just a unique figure in the sport at this time, and he did it at a place where they had another coach who was pretty good, pretty good one time. And Mitch, you're right about the players. There's so many players in the game, but the one I'll be watching tonight is a guy who apparently has made some sort of deal and can play college football forever, and that's Hunter Renfrow.
Yeah. I saw somebody wrote, unless he can come back for an 18th season of eligibility, this will probably be his last game.
Mitch, I love him. I can't remember a time when he wasn't playing for Clemson.
Didn't he catch a pass from Deshaun Watson?
Yes, I think he was catching passes when Danny Ford was winning a national championship at Clemson back in the 1980s.
He roomed with Refrigerator Perry, didn't he?
Well, I'd love to see him. I just the idea of a guy sticking in college that long, I'd love to see him. I know we're not in the business of predictions, but this is a championship game.
I like Alabama.
Anybody going to pick against Alabama?
Yes.
You are. You're going to go with Clemson.
I'm going to punch her. They got the kid, the puncher's chance. Yes, I'm going to pick up in a thriller.
I wish
Tua.
I could, but
Tua,
I can't.
Tua. That's my take on this
and,
game.
And I bet Jalen Hurts gets in for a few plays, even if Tua doesn't get hurt, and has some significant role in this game. There'll be a play. I don't know if it's going to be a touchdown, a winning play, or whatever, but he'll have some moments in this game where he's going to make a difference. So 2-1, we'll see when we come back on Friday. All right, time for our parting shots. And Bob Ryan, why don't you lead off?
Gentlemen, tribute must be paid. to the Toronto Raptors. You're saying, what's the matter with him?
What's he,
Now, listen to this. While we were all watching nonstop football, the Raptors had themselves a weekend. Saturday night, they went into Milwaukee in a battle for Eastern Conference supremacy and walked off with a 123-116 win. Kawhi Leonard and Pascal Siakam each had 30, and their bench had a total of 5 points. Sunday night, they played without Leonard, sitting out a back-to-back, but with Kyle Lowry, who'd missed the last six with a bad back. This time, they placed 8 men in double figures as the bench had 52, led by Norman Powell's career-high 23. Now, Toronto might as well be playing on Mars for all the love they get down here. But let me assure you, this is a serious team. And it looks as if this guy, Nick Nurse, and don't tell me you knew who he was, is up for the coaching job. The Toronto Raptors, start paying attention.
Everything that we love about sports in general, and pro football in particular, was on display this weekend with the 4 first-round games in the playoffs. And you know what else was on display? Why? And stop me if you've heard this one before. It's always worth remembering that sport, the fan is short for fanatics. By the fourth quarter of the Ravens-Chargers games, Raven fans were booing Lamar Jackson, without whom they wouldn't have had a game yesterday, every time the kid touched the ball. Of course, the game between the Eagles and the Bears came down to a kickball, not only hitting an upright, but the crossbar as well. And while all that was going on, players from both teams were watching that football, not knowing which one of them was going to have a game next weekend. And finally, there was our guy, Sebastian Janikowski, 97 years old, getting hurt in the Seahawks-Cowboys games, and the Seahawks not having a kicker, and a bazillion dollars worth of bets being altered in the end because in a two-point game, the spread was 2.5, and the over also kicked in because the Seahawks went for 2 on their last score. Sports, still the greatest live theater there is.
In a move sure to bring grateful tears to the eyes of many sports fans, the College Football Hall of Fame announced that the long wait is over. This year, it will induct the Goodyear blimp into its hallowed halls.
There you go.
I am not making this up. Said Kirk Herbstreit, former college football player and ESPN analyst, quote, "For me, playing under the blimp felt like a payoff for the hard work that goes into the game day, so I'm excited it's getting recognized for its contributions to college football." Again, I'm not making this up. The induction ceremony, the first time a non-human has made the hall, is certain to be an emotional event, especially when the blimp lowers itself down to the podium to make its speech. No doubt the old fellow will credit his roots and thank mom and dad Polyester for always believing it could be something, well, bigger. Despite its age, the blimp's speech will still be high-pitched, given all the helium it has inside of it. And we can only hope it won't go on too long, as you know how full of hot air blimps can sometimes be. But one thing is for sure, it's about time a dirigible was recognized for its role in college football. Even if the sport can't make sense of paying players, cheating coaches, a playoff system, or quarterbacks transferring like jumping frogs. The blimp gets its moment. It's in the Hall of Fame, and all is right with the world. The only question remaining is how they're going to fit the damn thing inside the building. That's going to wrap things up for today's Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this every Monday and Friday, so please be sure to join us at the end of the week. If you like what you heard, leave us a comment. If you didn't like what you heard, leave us 2 comments. And check it out and tell your friends they can get it anywhere, including, of course, radio.com. Until we see you on Friday, on behalf of Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying have a great week.